Hey, before you hang up, say this.
Sure.
This is Steve Pavlina, and you're listening to Vroom Vroom Veer.
Do you want me to say it like that?
You say it. Say it how Steve says it.
Okay. This is Steve Pavlina, and you are listening to Vroom Vroom Veer.
Perfect.
Good. There
Thanks,
you go.
Brother. Later.
Okay. All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Are you ready to thoughtfully steer away from your revved up, frenzied, and far too often scripted life? Then welcome to Vroom Vroom Veer with Jeff Smith, where he guides you down the road differently traveled by sharing unique experiences with guests who have managed to shift away from a life stuck on cruise control and veered their way into a more authentic and fulfilling one in all sorts of interesting and kind of remarkable ways. Get ready to Vroom Vroom Veer with your differently traveled road chauffeur, Jeff Smith.
Hello, Sir John Hargrave. Welcome to Vroom Vroom Veer. You're on the show right now.
Well, that was a rapid entry back into the atmosphere.
Thanks. I'm doing it Nerdist style.
That's great.
Well, welcome back, and thank you so much for being back on the show.
Thank you for having me again. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, you were on back in August, and we talked a lot about the book Mind Hacking then.
Which is now available in bookstores everywhere now, and on Amazon.
And when we talked about it, it was in beta mode.
That's right. That's right. And now it's in full public release.
It's in full release. And I got my copy, and I have to say I love it. It's awesome. So
thank you.
Well done. So the first thing I wanted to hit on that struck me as I was actually reading the book, because last time I skimmed it in like an hour maybe. So now I'm actually taking my time with coffee and reading it and having a good time with it. Is there a story about how this book came to be? What was the is there a story behind it at all?
The origin story
the origin
of mind
story
hacking.
Of mind hacking. Yeah,
that's yes. I was bit by a radioactive ant. And
an ant.
No,
okay.
That'd
be great.
The story is actually laid out in the first chapter of the book, and I won't give away the surprise, but let's just say that the Secret Service visited me on my doorstep.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah.
And you know, when the Secret Service show up, Jeff, it's probably a sign that something in your life has gone wrong.
Terribly wrong.
And so I realized that it was drugs and alcohol. I had a dependency, an addiction, and I needed to make a major change. And I decided that night, terrible night, by the way, once the Secret Service show up, horrifying. And I decided I was going to throw away all my alcohol and drugs. And that was such a difficult thing to do. I literally went to the supermarket in my neighborhood, and I threw them away in a dumpster behind the supermarket. And I just, that physical act of throwing them away was so tough. And what I discovered was, if I listened to my mind would say, "You're crazy. Don't you throw this away. This is insane.
There's so many better things to do with this."
Yes, like think of all the good times we've had.
Right.
But
right.
If I just focused on the muscle movement, literally one step at a time, then I was actually able to get through it. So I was almost like I was putting my mind on hold, focusing just on one moment at a time, the physical movement. And so that was kind of my first mind hack. That was the first technique or mental technique that I found to get through it. And then over the years, I began to develop other hacks like that as I stayed sober, and then eventually cataloged a lot of these, did a lot of reading, and the book is really a collection of these hacks that we can all use, not just to conquer addiction, but to turn our lives around in super positive ways.
Yeah, you know, and I am myself now, I don't think I'm an alcoholic. I don't think I have a problem, but every once in a while, I just decide to dry out a little bit.
Yeah.
So as of a couple of days ago, I think I started on Tuesday this week.
Yeah.
I'm doing a 45-day trial of no booze.
Oh, nice. Good for you.
Yeah. Well, so one of my hacks is your hacking system, okay? Because I know you know this because you went through it. Whenever you try something new, it's really hard.
Yeah.
And I don't really have a whole lot of difficulty with it unless I get into what I like to call my danger zones.
Yeah.
So for the drinking danger zones would be, say, like, oh, you know, 8 or 9 o'clock, and I just kind of want to chill out and look at some TV right. before bed. And that's a really good time to have a glass of wine.
Right.
So I have to do something different.
That's right. You need a new cue.
I need
a new
cue. Yeah, yeah.
To start that habit.
Yeah, yeah.
So what are you doing? What's different? What's the strategy?
I'm trying to get out of the house a little bit more often, do more exercise, walking with my wife in the neighborhood. I've changed where I sit. I think that's a big cue for me. If I'm sitting in the TV chair, I'm probably going to watch TV. And then if I watch TV, I'm probably going to really want to have a drink. I learned this trick for a different hack because, let's see here. When was it? It's a couple years ago. I did one of those, it was like a 30-day juice fast.
Yeah.
That's where you eat a little bit of food, but there's like 3 days in a row twice during a 10-day period, I want to say, or maybe a little bit longer, where you just drink juice.
Yeah.
And I was fine the whole day until dinner time. And then I just had this big mason jar of juice and I went,
You can really taste the kale.
You can, yeah, mine were, yes, yes. They varied, but yes, you could always taste the kale, right? Or, you know, beets or whatever they happen to be. But I always knew I could not sit there between the hours of, say, 7 and 9. After 9 o'clock, I was fine because for whatever reason, my body doesn't want to eat after 9. But between 7 and 9, I was like, honey, let's go for a walk. Let's go to the base. Let's walk around and shop. And she's like, really? Cool. You know, so these self-improvement things are good to get your ass off the couch.
Well, I love this. I love these examples and the 45 days without booze. Let's talk about that.
Sure.
Let's use that as our sort of our test case here.
Okay.
So I've just finished 21 days with no food at all.
Oh, so
no
food. You're done because I was going
to only water. I just finished this morning. This is a great time to talk to me because I just started eating. So
wow, that's a little scary.
And what I wanted to do with this was basically say, listen, we are all capable of extraordinary things. We're capable of achieving the impossible if we use our minds, if we hack our minds. And so most people, when I talked to them, said going 21 days without food is impossible. Most people said if you skip a meal, you're going to die.
Right.
So,
and we all know that's not true at some level.
That's totally true, right? So I made it through. But the first thing I learned, Jeff, was basically make sure you have a goal. So what I love about your 45-day plan is that you have a goal. It's a definite goal. So when I was in college, I also tried to fast. I tried to, as just said, I'm going to go as long as I can. And like by day 3, I was famished. And by day 4, I literally spent the entire day just looking through cookbooks and imagining recipes. And then the whole day. And then day 5,
that's not a good idea. Collapsed. Yeah, that's not a good strategy for success there.
No. So day 5, I was like shoveling Ritz bits in my mouth. So that didn't work. But I didn't have a goal. Like I just basically said, I'm going to go as long as I can. So you've got a goal and also you're sharing it with people. So you're making it public. You just told me.
Right.
Which is awesome. And I told
the podcasting world. There you go.
You told the entire world that you're going to do this. Now you're accountable. So there's all this research. A lot of it's in the book about if we set goals and then we write them down and then we share them with other people, basically get help, get support. We're much more likely to achieve it. So when I did this 21-day fast, I basically said, I'm going without food. I told everybody, and I got a network of support. I got family and friends around me who are going to help me make it through, and I did. So have a goal.
Have a goal. is awesome. I mean, yeah, and the thing is you can't just jump into it willy-nilly, I think, is you have to have a plan. I remember this same time that I was doing the prep for my juice fast. I was already doing a different podcast at the time. And we did a show about me preparing to do a juice fast. you know, and I was talking about all the different things I was thinking about and planning, and I had a spreadsheet about all the different vegetables that I was going to have to buy, and we were going to have to go shopping like 2 or 3 times a week, and just so everything stayed fresh. And I was like a bit of a geek, you know?
Yeah, a juicing geek.
I was a juicing geek, exactly. And because I knew if I just went in like you on your first try, you're just like, I'm just going to do this. And then you do it. It's almost like you're doomed to fail.
Yeah.
I talked to a couple of other people that just sort of randomly pinged me on Twitter. And they were like, we're going to do a juice thing too. And I'm like, that's great. Let me know how it goes. And then 2 weeks into their thing, they both like fell off their thing before their goal. And I think one of them told a story on their podcast about how they were out in the world and they kind of like forgot to plan. And then they realized they hadn't eaten enough food and they were starving and they were in emergency mode and they just went to Taco Bell.
The next best thing after a juice fast, of course.
And they had been in it for
Taco Bell,
you know, several days. So they got, you know, horribly sick, of course.
Yeah. So you had a plan.
Yeah. Well, I had a plan. I had a plan. Yes.
Their plan was to go to Taco Bell.
Their plan was to fast for a couple of days and then
get a chalupa. Themselves.
A chalupa. Could you imagine? Yeah. So let's talk a little bit. Well, before we get too far into mind hacking, I have to indulge a little bit of my geekness.
Yeah.
And you, I think, are one of the people that I know and talk to that can maybe appreciate what I went through a couple days ago.
Okay.
It was a geek moment. It has nothing to do with mind hacking.
All right, let's hear it.
Okay. So I was at work, and right now I'm doing low-level IT support for Inglewood School District.
Got it.
So part of what I'm doing is like scrounging old, say, Windows XP-ish machines.
Yeah.
And they are officially salvage. They are throwaway. But they're also not spending money on new computers. So I'm trying to, you know, breathe new life into these what should be museum piece computers, right?
Yeah.
So my strategy was is I'm loading a flavor of Linux on all of them. A lot of them. And then they become something much like a Chromebook. You can you can't do much with them, but you can browse forever and they'll run great.
Yeah, that's a cool idea.
Right. So I'm doing this and it's working great and everybody's loving it. And then I run into this situation where I have this box and I'm doing this by just plopping the DVD in, right? I get this box, this computer, and it doesn't have a DVD that works. And I'm like, no problem. I have a pile of old computers. I couldn't find another DVD drive that would work. So
that would be compatible.
It wasn't compatible. Right.
Yeah.
So I was like, huh. So I looked into, could I wipe my USB drive? I know there's lots of different ways. It was just DVD was the thing I was doing. So right at like, say like 30 minutes before I'm supposed to leave, I have that aha geek moment. I'm like, whoa, what if I swapped out the hard drive?
Oh yeah, there you go.
Right? Okay, so I'm thinking that might work. So I take the hard drive of computer, target computer, which is old, slap it into a new computer whose DVD drive works, and load it. Right?
Got it.
Take the hard drive out, put it back into the old machine.
Well, you could have left them there in place, right?
No, because the new machine had to be its own thing.
Okay, it's got to be its own BIOS.
It's got to do its own job. So I put its hard drive back, and that was a decent computer. That was like a Windows 7 box, so I wouldn't want to do that to it. So all I was using it was for everything, you know, all of its innards and its DVD drive to burn a hard drive image, basically. So I knew from my experience with Windows that if I took that hard drive out of that computer B and put it into the old computer, Windows would freak out and go, wrong hardware, I quit.
Right.
Right? So I kind of thought Linux might do that too. Right? So I plop it back in and it booted and it worked.
Oh, isn't that such the greatest feeling?
It was the greatest feeling.
I did the upgrade to Windows 10, yeah, and I had to install a bunch of stuff, and some stuff was still on CD drives from back in the day.
Oh, my goodness.
Some old software. And I don't have a CD drive, but one of the computers does. Uh-huh. And so I figured out how, through the network, to hook into that computer, map that CD drive to my computer as its own,
you nerd,
CD drive, and get the thing to work.
So
and I
mapped,
had a similar
mapped,
feeling, though
you
it wasn't the, quite on your level.
A share to that DVD drive. Ah, oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. How did it work?
Was I'm
it?
With you. I'm with you, man.
Good hack. Well done, sir.
Thanks.
Yeah. So I'm going to hit a couple of things that I liked in the book, if you don't mind, just
yep.
because we're
yep,
we're
please.
Geeking out. So you talked about the movie A Beautiful Mind and John Nash.
Yeah.
In your book, and the nugget that I got out of it was that you had a quote in there about how this is a process and a continual process, not waking up from a dream.
Yeah.
And that was like an aha for me, because my journey with meditation, mindfulness, and all this practice, I think the key visual metaphor was Neo waking up in a pile of goo.
Hmm.
Right? So
yeah, that great scene.
That's an awesome scene, and it's still a great metaphor. It just doesn't work for when you say, no, it's actually you have to do this thing every day.
Yeah.
That's how you wake up. You know, it's not like waking up in a vat of goo and everybody gives you a Star Trek communicator and there's no money. That's not going to happen. But what might happen is, you know, you'll get better at your life, you know, if you do this continual process. And I think anything, more than anything, your book is more practical than most attempts at, hey, have a mindfulness practice. You know, they never answer why, but you do.
Well, thank you. I've been getting that feedback from a lot of people since the book went on sale. That's really practical. And a lot of people have said, I've tried mindfulness or meditation. It never worked or it never stuck. But like, you know, we do things like gamify it. We turn it into a video game.
Right.
So you give yourself awareness points for realizing when your mind is wandering. And things like that I've personally found very useful for keeping me interested and engaged and also being able to track my success. So if you are a geek, you know, you love data and you love kind of seeing your progress over time.
Right.
And the book has lots of tips for doing that. So I'm glad you're getting a lot out of it. That's great.
Yeah. And I don't know if you remember, but one of my requests for your app was a tap counter.
Yeah, I thought a lot about that. I don't control that app. I would love to put that in because it's such a great idea.
Well, here's the deal, though, is anybody with a phone can just go download a tap counter.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
That's what I did. Because
how does that work?
It's basically, I went to the Android or whatever it is, the Google Play Store, and I searched tap counter. And there's a ton of them. And the one that I got was called Tap Counter. And all it is it's just you tap the screen and it's got a big counter on it. And it's got reset and remove one count.
So to be clear to the audience what we're talking about. So like when you practice, we call it concentration training. But
right.
You might call it meditation. When you practice, you're focusing on the breath. And like for 20 minutes, you're focusing on the breath. And the idea is when your mind wanders, when you catch your mind wandering, which it will, that you then tap the tap counter and you award yourself a point and then you bring it back to the breath again.
Right.
And so you're now able to actually quantify, instead of just keeping track in your head, the number of attention wanderings that you catch, which is the whole point. The whole point is to notice
right.
when the mind's wandering so that then throughout the day we get better at separating ourselves from the mind and at not listening to the crazy talk that our minds give us, but being the masters of our minds, hacking them.
Yeah, and it's really easy too. The other thing that I do, if I don't have my phone, I'll just, like you said, use my fingers to count those points.
Yeah.
But it's not as geeky, right?
Tap Count is good. I'll give it a try. Good.
Yeah.
Thank you for that tip.
Yeah, no problem. And yeah, I just really like it. Oh, and another thing on that A Beautiful Mind movie, which I think is amazing, by the way.
Great movie and a great book also.
Right.
Read and watch.
Now, I meant to look up and I didn't do this. I'm notorious, so I think I should do this on every podcast, but the director of that film, I listened to him on another podcast. I don't remember his name. It was either on Tim Ferriss or Nerdist. Do you know who it is, the director?
That would be Mr. Ron Howard, I believe.
No way.
Yeah.
Is it Ron Howard? Was he the director? Maybe it was the writer. I'm not sure. But okay, anyway, maybe. Yeah. Somebody, the guy that put together that movie, he may have even been a producer. I don't know. But he read the book and he was like, you know what? This is a really good book, but I want to do something really, really cool that's not in the book. And that is to make the whole movie about the subjective experience of having that disorder.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know what I'm saying? Because you get it. As soon as I say that, you go, yeah, that's what they did. Because halfway through the movie, you have no clue that he's having delusions.
Yeah.
And then at some point, there's this what kind of thing, and they shift and they show you his delusions. Versus the real world.
Yeah. So if you have not read the movie or
watched the book.
Yeah. So it's about this brilliant mathematician, real life story, John Nash, Nobel Prize winner, invented game theory, and also paranoid schizophrenic.
Right.
And he eventually healed himself through the power of his own mind without the aid of medication. And he hacked his own mind. And that's why we talk about him in mind hacking. But yeah, the movie is powerful because you are like spun into this web of insanity.
Yeah.
And you really do think he's being chased by, you know, the CIA. And I mean, he truly believed he was emperor of Antarctica.
Wow.
And that aliens were talking to him through the New York Times.
Yeah,
he was really in a paranoid, delusional world, but he got himself out, and that's the remarkable part of that.
And not only did he get himself out, but then he became a very high functioning, you know, professor. And before he, you know, started his own mind hacking journey, he was kind of a dick. They portray him in the movie. You know, he's not, he's kind of an egomaniac. He's not interested in teaching.
Yeah.
Even though it's his job to be as a professor, he just wants to do research. And then towards the end of his career, he actually becomes a decent guy.
Yeah.
Which is still even more awesome. The other thing that, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but, Pema Chodron talked about that movie, and she is a like a Buddhist monk or nun or whatever you want to call it, right? And I've got one of her books. It's an audiobook. I can't remember the name of it, but I'll put it in the show notes. It's a really good one, and I talk about it all the time. But anyway, she really loved it just because of the whole Buddhist idea of how reality is an illusion.
Yeah.
So she talked to one of her other, you know, Buddhist buddies, boss, whatever, and was like, well, hey, what's the difference between, you know, the illusion that we all say is our reality and a delusion that this schizophrenic person has? And he said, well, it's pretty much the same, except the delusion only one person can say.
Yeah, I know. I knew you were going to say that. The illusion is shared.
Right.
That's the only difference. We all agree
on
the illusion, and the delusion we don't agree on.
Right. Right. Isn't that amazing?
Totally amazing. I totally believe that.
Yeah. I thought
100%.
Yes. I was like, yeah. Whoa, that's the best.
That is such a great insight. That was worth the price of admission. That was worth the price of this podcast alone.
Yeah, exactly. Which was free, of course. So yeah, I've been having a blast with this. So let's talk, let's dive in a little bit more about your experience with your 21 days without food. What sorts of, did you have to develop any sorts of new kinds of hacks or did you
A whole arsenal of new hacks.
Really? How hard was it? When was the roughest spot during the day?
The roughest spot was when my wife walked into the office one day eating popcorn. That was the worst. And it was like the chewing and the smell. Yeah, and I was like, oh, really?
Oh, get out of here. I want to kill you.
No, it was very difficult. It was tough. But I'll tell you, I learned so much. And it was such an amazing experience, Jeff. One of the things I learned early on was to feed the positive and starve the negative. Feed the positive and starve the negative. So, you know, when people heard I was going to do this, the first thing most people said was, don't die. That was it. Like, just make sure you don't die. And that, like, negative thought.
That is so, you know, typical of our culture, though.
Yeah, totally. And right? And that thought of, yeah, like, I may die was, like, really scary. And right, if I had allowed myself to concentrate on that, I never would have made it. So instead, I had kind of this arsenal of positive thoughts, you know, things like, you know, I'm not going to die. In fact, I'm going to be stronger out of this. Or, right, you know, I'm feeling full of energy. I use that a lot. Like, I am full of energy. And crazily, I really was full of energy. I was really nervous when I went into it because I run a company. I had this book launch. Like, it was a very busy 3 weeks that I wasn't going to have enough energy just to be effective. But in many ways, I had more energy because I was constantly focused on that thought of, like, I am full of energy. It really worked. And the other thing was, when I talked with people to feed the positive. So if somebody came to me and said, how you feeling? And I would say, you know, the logical answer would be starving. But instead, I would say, I'm feeling good. And I did feel good when I said that. And I found that there's this kind of rebound effect when we talk to other people about ourselves. So if somebody says, how you doing? And you say, oh, I had a terrible night's sleep and my leg hurts. Then they are going to kind of have sympathy for you. They're going to kind of like look at you and say, oh, I'm sorry. And then that's fed back to you. Right, and it reinforces in your mind that I'm feeling kind of bad today. Whereas if somebody says, how you feeling? You say, I'm good. Sun's shining. Got some stuff I'm excited about. Then the other person smiles. They brighten a little bit. They say, oh, he's feeling good. Isn't that great? And that comes back to you, bounces back immediately. So there's this strange echo effect that I realized I could leverage just by constantly affirming that I was feeling good. And strangely enough, I really did feel good.
Yeah. Wow. This is weird. Because I did some of that, just as you were telling that story, like I've been on this sort of like, about say a couple years ago I did massage school,
yeah.
So I don't really want to do massage, but it also led me to get into yoga, and really learn about my body and movement and about how to like self help pain, right? Yeah. And I like self-corrected with, you know, okay, not all self, but, you know, self with help, lots of different pain. Right. So I figured out that a lot of my moodiness when I was out and about in the world with my wife, trying to keep up with her, you know, high speed shopping adventures, were not, I'm a bad husband or I'm a piece of crap or, you know, I'm a moody guy. It was, I was in pain. I was in that just below conscious pain.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to sit out and have a break. But slowly but surely, as I was like, okay, my feet hurt, I need new shoes, or, you know, this hurts, I need to work on this in yoga. I was, you know, like, I think it was I did a 7-hour drive to Tucson, I think, for the holidays. Mm-hmm. And in the past, that would have been like, oh, I need a whole lot of like strategy because it's going to kill my back and my hip. Right. Mm-hmm. And I got to Tucson and I was like, all the way to Tucson, I kept saying to myself, I feel good.
Yeah.
And I did. I wasn't lying. I did feel good. But what you're talking about, that feedback loop, that thing about, you know, as soon as you start saying that, oh, woe is me story.
Yeah.
Then that's what you're going to feel.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And it's a choice.
It's so true. It's so true. And I'll tell you, one of the craziest things is when you're going without food for 21 days. So first of all, your body goes into like a low power mode. So your body like just instinctually says, we got to conserve calories.
Oh, right.
And it stops like any unnecessary physical movement. So like there's no fidgeting. There's no kind of like pacing. Your body says, no. We're conserving, but
right.
Your mind does the same thing. And this was crazy for me. All of the energy that we spend on negative thoughts, on useless, unproductive thoughts, for me, just went away. And I realized with just total clarity how much of that goes on in my head. And I think all of our heads, like, for example, how many times do you argue with other people, have imaginary arguments in your head for a conversation that will never exist?
Every day.
That kind of thing. Was
several
like,
times a day.
Yeah, right. Like me too. And I was like, no way. Like, it's just not going to happen. And things like self-doubt, you know, things like second-guessing. I became so good at making decisions at my business because like I decided something, there was no like, well, should I or shouldn't I? It was just like, make a decision and go and just do it. So everything had this clarity without the hemming and the hawing and the anxiety and the worry and all of those other negative thought loops that we all have. But what an amazing amount of mental energy we spend on that stuff. And if we can learn to free it up, we can totally channel that into
useful
making our lives more awesome, just like you did with your pain on the drive. You showed up feeling great because you did exactly that.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and that was, I think that was sort of like carried over, you know, and then I did the same thing. Now every time I go shopping and just like I flew to Japan and back and you know, every time I would get to Japan, we land and then there's like, okay, we've just been on a plane for somewhere between 9 and 13 hours or something, plus all that slack time. And now we land and we still have some 2 hours of messing around at the airport. And then we have to get on a train for 3 hours before we get to where we're going to be. And so that was always just like, you know, grumpy.
That's a killer.
I was always grumpy about that. I was always like, the best plan would be just to like land and then sleep if we could get a hotel, wouldn't it? But that didn't work out this year. But the whole time, even when I was sitting in the airport, I was like, I got a sandwich. I got a beer. I'm pretty happy. And I did. I felt pretty good. It's pretty amazing what you can do. You know, when you start veering towards a mind hack.
That's the veer. And
that's
I
the veer,
think,
right?
I think that a lot of people will probably hear this and go, you know, it's just all positive affirmation.
It's not, no.
Yeah, and also like, well, what do I do if it's not true? What do I do if I really am in pain? And, you know, one of the things, another hack that I used, because I was hungry all the time, was when it grew really unbearable, I would just say, you know, what's my experience in this moment? How am I feeling in this moment right now?
Mm.
And, you know, it would just be something simple like, well, I'm sitting in this chair at this moment, or like I can feel like the fabric of my clothes against my skin at this moment. And just doing that again and again and again. And you find that like, this moment is totally bearable. No matter what's going on, this moment is okay because you're in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
What's not okay and what we psych ourselves out with is the long-term implications. Was this pain going to be with me forever?
Right. Yes.
You know, it's that fear of the future that like drives us insane and makes us feel like it's unbearable. But this moment is fine. So you can tell yourself for this moment, it's bearable. It's bearable. For this moment, right now, I do feel good. And you can say that and be completely honest without feeling like you're just trying to psych yourself out.
Yeah, Sam Harris talks a little bit about this in his book, Waking Up.
Yeah.
Which is another really great book on mindfulness for the non-woo-woo types. It's thoroughly devoid of spirituality on purpose. Just for those folks, not that there's anything wrong with that, but you know, it's more palatable for people that get turned off by woo-woo.
And that was my goal with mind hacking was to, exactly. I said at the beginning, no woo-woo.
No woo-woo.
No woo-woo around here.
That's good because, you know, most nerds aren't into woo-woo. So if you want to reach a nerd audience, then it has to be woo-less or woo-woo-less. But the
de-woo-wooed?
De-woo-wooed. There you go. Debugged, de-woo-wooed.
We had a woo-woo-botomy.
Or an ectomy.
Yeah.
A woo-ectomy. So what he said was...
The new laser woo-woo removal is the most high-tech
method. And less scarring.
Yeah.
Minimal. Minimal. As you extract the woo-woo.
And it's covered by most major insurances.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if you got one of those PPOs. But anyway, Sam says when you're tired or you're sleepy or you're hungry, right? The real you isn't the thing that's hungry. You know?
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
Does that, you know what I'm talking about? So as you're thinking about, oh, I'm sleepy, and then you detach a little bit, you take that step back and you go, well, I'm noticing hunger, but the noticer isn't actually the thing that's hungry. The body's hungry, but you're fine. You know, whatever it is that magic you inside of wherever, it's always fine. It's never tired. It's noticing tired. It's never hungry. It's noticing hungry, and it's there to do something about it. It's like the kernel in a computer.
Oh, I thought you meant Colonel Sanders. Everything goes to food.
It's the Colonel right with a K. That's right. You're still hungry. Have you eaten yet?
Oh, well, the first day back, you have to take it very slow.
I know, right.
So just very small portions of melon are all I have had. So, yes, I'm still hungry.
Yeah.
But I totally agree with what you say, Jeff. And you know, we talk about sometimes getting into the balcony. That was another mind hack. That I used, where you're sort of looking down on your mind, you know, you're up in the balcony looking down. And when you look at it that way, you can detach from yourself, just like you're saying, and you can say, I'm not hungry. The body is hungry, or, you know, this thing, this organism is hungry, but I'm actually this sort of, you know, presence, this wholeness presence, out here. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Exactly. That's just observing all this.
But that's okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Or this point of consciousness. Point I don't know, however you want to think about it.
Yeah,
but that was a really useful way of looking at it. I like that.
Yeah. The other thing that I noticed this morning as I was doing my first ever concentration training exercise game, which was awesome, was, you know, I randomly felt sad. You know, that happens sometimes, right? And I didn't really have any content. It just, I felt sad, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, counting and then feeling sad and counting the breathing and counting how many times I went off and away. And then I got done. I was done. And I think I counted to 15 and 20 minutes was up. And then I rolled over and I didn't feel sad anymore. So whatever that sad feeling was, I think it had more to do with, it was just like this body position, like what Sam called a constellation of sensation. It's just this map, and something in your brain associates that map with sad. So if you move a little, you might not be sad anymore,
which is
pretty crazy. I was shocked. I was like, first I was shocked about, what am I sad about? And there's absolutely nothing to be sad about. And I was like, okay, well, I'll just go with it and keep, you know, breathing and thinking and counting. And then, but as soon as I moved, it went away. It was weird.
Yeah, I think you did the right thing. Just observe it and just keep moving on. I talked briefly in the book about when I was getting sober, how I would just have these waves of emotion that would wash over me at random times. I'd be listening to a song on the radio. And I'd like start just burst out in tears, have to pull the car over. And, you know, there is when you kind of going through this process or starting to learn to be mindful, there are these processes that happen. I don't know. I don't understand them, but yeah, no, I know that you just sort of observe them and they come and go like rain clouds. So
right. You
kind of pack like it's going to be a rainy day. You get ready for it. And then eventually they'll pass by if you just stay focused on
the moment. I think the key, though, is what you said, is hunker down and let it pass.
Yeah.
Because if you get stuck and don't attach anything to it. Don't try to think about it. Don't try to look for meaning. Just go, okay, this is what I'm feeling now, and let it go.
Don't spend the rest of your day psychoanalyzing whether you were molested as a child.
Exactly. Yeah. Actually, we talked a lot about that in massage school, so much so that they have like a term for it. And of course, I don't remember that term.
Where people's emotions are released through massage.
Yeah.
I believe that.
Yeah. It's totally a thing. And they teach you about it. And it's like, basically, I think they just called it somebody's going to have an emotional release. And it's probably not going to, they're not going to know why. But they'll just start weeping and sighing and maybe crying. And here's what you do. You know?
I saw an ad on Craigslist for a massage therapist that allowed an emotional release. I don't know if that was the same thing. But what kind of emotions do people, is it just sadness or anger?
No.
Pleasure and anything?
I think most people most highly associate it with crying or sobbing or sadness. But some people giggle.
Yeah.
Anger, I've not seen a lot of anger. And I only did massage for a little over a year, in a spa scenario. And I saw, a handful of people cry a lot. Crying is the most, I think, repressed thing. People, it's okay to be angry, in our society. It's
true.
Yeah, and it's okay.
Was this men or women crying or both?
Both. There was one
people,
dude.
Are people embarrassed or how do they respond afterward?
Well, because of the professional detachment, they have permission to do that
in that
scenario. So, and I think that's why they do it. Especially, have you ever heard of Reiki?
Yeah.
I studied Reiki too. You can get a certificate in a weekend. Woo!
it's an intensive prayer program.
Right. But it's another thing that then you have in your toolkit when if somebody comes into the spa and wants Reiki, you can say, yes, I can do that. But especially the Reiki sessions, those folks are almost wanting to release. And that's why they come in to do that.
That's fascinating to me.
Right. Yeah. It was an amazing thing. But that really like locked in that whole idea that observing emotion is like it's part of the neural pathway is this what that constellation of sensation that Sam Harris talks about. And it's just sort of like a snapshot that the brain saves and associates strongly with emotion X. You can say it and attach it to any old neural pathway because I even have a snapshot for this is what I feel like when I really want a glass of wine. I know that snapshot, right? And I get up and get off the couch, turn off the TV and go for a walk because I know what's coming next if I don't.
Well, it also shows to me how closely linked the body and the mind really are. And we all kind of know that intellectually, but we don't really exercise the power. And to take it back to your original 45-day experiment, like you're really smart to get off the couch. You get your body out of the location because your mind has such a strong association with that location that you do have to get your body out. And, when I was on this 21-day fast, I would over lunchtime, I would go outside and take a walk and get some breath, like really focus on just consciously breathing and getting oxygen into my lungs and my head. And it really was restorative. And that whole idea behind get your body into a different place and your mind will follow.
Totally. Yeah. And you can do that even if you can't leave, just by getting up and changing your posture, you know,
yeah,
standing like Superman.
Or breathing more deeply, like just breathing being conscious, breathing from the abdomen, breathing from the belly. That helps a lot, I will tell you.
And going to make somebody laugh, or just going in and having a laugh, that'll give you a little bit of dopamine and or endorphin. So
totally.
I had a Loretta Bruning, she's a PhD. She does neuroscience and compares it to mammalian behavior. She's awesome. But she talked about laughing gives us this little jolt of endorphin because our body freaks out because our innards are shaking.
It's good.
Don't you love
PhDs?
So
if you sat on like the paint shaker machine at Home Depot, that would also perhaps...
That might
stimulate endorphins. I have to go try that.
That might just be a little bit too much.
Might be good. Who knows?
The last thing I wanted to hit on before we wrap it up, and I want you to hit your... So your URL for your book, has that changed, or is it still mindhacky.ng?
Yep, same. So mindhacky.ng, you can download the app we've been talking about.
Right.
You can also get the new 21-day program, which is a series of guided exercises that I walk you through.
Which is, they're amazing, too.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really proud of those. We worked really hard on them. They've got original music loops that help these positive loops stick in your head. We've just gotten great feedback from users. That's all totally free. And then the book itself, you can get on Amazon or at fine bookstores everywhere.
Right. And I'm going to link to the Amazon link, and then I'll also put mindhacky.ng in there as well. And the free version is still available too, right? If people want to preview the beta, it's now the full-on book for free. That's amazing.
That's correct. That. And you
it's
know,
not as good because you can't write in on your iPad.
Right. The real book has amazing like worksheet plans so that you can record all your scores and track everything. And, you know, we hope that people, even if they read the free book, will get a lot out of it and buy a copy of the hardcover for a friend.
Your mind hacking skills worked on a couple of different levels because I actually wrote in the book. And that's like a thing I'm usually loath to do.
Yeah, some people are nervous, but I say in the book...
It's okay, book, you should.
a book is made of paper, and paper was invented for writing.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, yeah, he's right. I'm using pencil, so I'm not committed all the way. But I am writing it.
Good.
The last thing I wanted to hit on that I really liked was the thing that we shouted from the top of the mountain on the last time you were on the show. Is you are not your mind.
Yeah.
So I wanted to hit on that again. And what you said was at some point in your book that you had identified so strongly with your mind that you believed everything it told you.
Right.
And that's so true. That's like the metaphor that you're talking about when you get lost in the movie. That's your life.
Yeah.
You know,
we all do. I think we all do.
I know
we all identify with the mind. And so when our mind says, hey, you know, you're never going to succeed at this, you're no good at math, you can't exercise, you can't lose weight, you can't get a relationship, you're not like, we accept it as if it was just this like
it's written in stone and that's just all there is.
This critical like teacher standing over our shoulder like, I'm sorry. And the most freeing thing that you can learn in life is that you don't have to believe those things, that you can reprogram those loops with whatever the hell you want, anything that you want to reprogram it with. You can do that. And that is what the tremendous promise and excitement of all this mind hacking is about.
It's amazing. Yeah. When you realize you had a choice that to, you know, A, notice that it's just your mind. B, you had to question it. You had to say, is that really true? That's not really true. Is it 100% true? You're doing the questioning thing. And then you're saying, well, what if that weren't there? What if it was this instead? So you take it not only from, you go from like notice, question, rewrite. See, that's the key here because we're hackers. We have to rewrite it.
Right.
Amen. So well done, sir. Thank you again for being on my show. This has been a geek fest for me.
Yeah. It's been awesome. It's awesome. I love talking with you.
Yeah, we didn't talk about old computers enough though. Ah. We did geek out about that. We had that geek moment. Yes, we did.
We had the hard drive moment.
We had the hard drive and yes. And you we shared out your DVD player on the network so you could reload some old CD-ROM software. Just last week, I threw away two boxes of floppy disks.
Why did you do that? That's the true geek response. What?
Guess what? I don't even have a drive anymore. So whatever was on them, it doesn't matter. But hey, this has been great. Thank you so much again. And we'll hit it one more time. It is Sir John Hargrave. And you can find out more about his book, Mind Hacking. You can either Google Mind Hacking or go to Mind Hacky and then .ng. And you can check it out on Amazon. And then there's links to the app where you can play along with me and John. Whatever you do on the app, John will come in and give you a thumbs up, which is awesome. So thank you again, and we'll see you next time.
Awesome.
Thanks for taking the time to ride along with us on another episode of Vroom Vroom Veer. For podcast info and show notes, be sure to head over to vvveer.com. That's VVVER.com. Man, that's fun to say. And we'll catch up with you next time here on Vroom Vroom Veer.